Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm Andy Griffin. No, we didn't change theme songs. It's Daryl Hall's birthday now. Mello, by the way, welcome to the program.
Welcome. Hi.
So when I was in high school, and I'm a little older than you, but Hall and Oates were it was a duo, popular duo. They were what word I like to use, ubiquitous. They were everywhere. They could breathe on something and it would turn into a gold record.
Okay.
And so they had hit after hit after hit after hit. I would say probably, I don't know the number specifically, but 10 hits in a row or something that went to number one. And so it got to the point where if a Hall & Oates song came on the radio, and we didn't have MP3 players and Spotify and all that stuff back then, if it came on the radio, I would change the channel because I got so sick of them. Stockton was telling me kind of the same in the early 2000s with Bruno Mars.
Yes.
Every time you turn on the radio, there was a Bruno Mars song on. And it wasn't until later, him with Bruno Mars, me with Hall & Oates, I found out, you know what? These guys are actually really good. They're geniuses. This is my favorite Hall & Oates song. This song is called She's Gone. And by the way, Daryl Hall is old. Kind of a reflection on me, I guess, and how old. But Daryl Hall is 78 years old today.
Ooh.
Yeah. So. I don't know. I just
love
this song.
Love this, huh? I just thought like we were like going on an elevator ride together. I didn't know what was.
No, come on! Don't call it elevator music. You're making me feel even older. It picks up here. Oh, you won't hear this on the elevator.
Okay.
All right, I'll turn him down now. I love this. Hall & Oates, Kiss on My List. Seeking what is possible in terms of common ground, I believe in building consensus. We are a diverse people, geographically, regionally, in terms of where we are in our backgrounds and what the American people do want is what we have leaders who can, that they have leaders who can build consensus where we can compromise and understand it's not a bad thing as long as you don't compromise and find common sense solutions. And that has been my approach.
So
Mello, what did she say?
So what I heard,
uh-huh.
If I'm going to interpret it for you.
Please do.
Is what I heard is I had this one idea, but then the consensus of everyone else was the other idea. So in order to find common ground, I switched to the other answer.
In other words, I will say anything I have to say mm-hmm. to get elected.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what I really believe. I just want people to vote for me.
I did see this thing, and there were some interviewers, like, talking to Kamala and asking her questions. And then there was a group of people that read body language, and they were interpreting her answers for whether they were true or not.
Mm.
And what you notice is when somebody's answering, and if their head is going back and forth, like left to right, and they're saying something in the affirmative, then they're lying because their body won't lie. Their body is saying, no, that's not true. But their words are saying, yes, this is true. And there were several instances where the question was asked and she was saying what the right answer was, but her head was shaking no.
Wow.
So that was pretty interesting, too. So when you're watching people like that and they're giving those kind of interviews, I always watch for the head to see if they're actually being truthful or if they're just telling you what you need to hear.
My wife and I, and a lot of you are into those true crime shows where they highlight what happened on a particular crime or whatever. Quite oftentimes they'll take the lead suspect and ask them if they'll take a polygraph, a lie detector test.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them actually say, yeah, I'll take the test because they know that 90% of them are what they call inconclusive,
mm-hmm.
which means that, yeah, you might be lying, but you might not too, and we're not sure. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be funny to put Kamala Harris on a lie detector test? And then my wife pointed out, well, it would be inconclusive. And I'm like, well, how do you figure? And she's like, well, there ain't nothing there, man. The needles wouldn't go anywhere because she doesn't ever say anything.
No, the answer is never concise.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. Like, I've never seen anybody talk like that except for, like, Dr. Seuss, like, in circles, you know?
I do not like green eggs and ham.
Exactly.
Sad, but true. Okay, I wanted to, and again, you know, you have your own opinion. You can vote for who you want out there, but I'm here to tell you that our vice president has had almost 4 years now to shut the border down, to improve the economy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and she hasn't done it. So,
or visit the border.
Yeah, seriously. All right, let's change topics. I wanted to talk about the deer hunt. Now, when I moved to Utah, it was in 1980, and I remember getting on a school bus. Now, I'm 14 years old, getting on a school bus, and these kids are fascinated because I'm the new kid who just moved from Texas, right? And they ask me about, you know, hunting. Did you go hunting? And I'm not really a hunter, but I had been in on enough conversations in Texas to know, you know, what, you know, who went hunting and what they hunted for and things like that. So I started talking a little bit about what I had heard, because I, like I said, I'm not a hunter. And I found out within 30 seconds that I was in way over my head, because everyone, including these 14-year-old kids on the bus with me, they went hunting all the time, Mello.
I know. I've never been hunting. I think you're either in a hunting family or you're not.
But how many people do you know? Maybe not today, but think back to your youth. How many people did you know went hunting all the time?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was like a whole week of school off when I was a kid, and it was for the deer hunt.
Yeah, they didn't call it fall break. They didn't call it, you know, whatever. They called it deer hunt. Deer hunt.
Because people were pulling their kids out anyway, so they might as well make it a break.
Now, the deer hunt starts on October 19th, so what is that, a week from tomorrow, I think, and goes through October 27th. There have been muzzle loader, archery, and other hunts, but mm-hmm. the regular deer hunt is October 19th through 27th. And I posed the question on our website, 890kdxu.com, is Utah's deer hunt a thing of the past? And the reason I posed the question is you look at the numbers, and seemingly everyone we knew, I would say at least half of the people we knew, went hunting back in the 80s. But right now in Utah, there are only 7.9% of adults are registered hunters in the state of Utah. 7.9%.
Really?
That's like 1 in 12.
That's 1 in 12 wild.
So I wonder then, is it... And there were people commenting, Mello, on why this was happening, why there are so many fewer hunters. And, you know, a lot of them were, we had a lot of move-ins, people from other states. I suppose that's one reason. But what do you think maybe would be some of the others?
I think that maybe people feel like it's ethically wrong because there's a lot more snowflakes around, you know, that think that it's not kind to kill an animal. Maybe cost prohibitive.
It is expensive. You think about how much goes into it. You got to have a rifle. You got to have ammunition. You got to have the equipment you wear. I mean, deer hunters got to be wearing orange and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't get shot.
Yeah.
My brother and I went hiking one October years ago, and we got shot at because we weren't wearing orange.
No.
And they saw movement in the trees and shot at us, and fortunately they missed. But yeah, we.
That's terrifying.
I know. We were out in the woods hiking and almost got shot.
Oh my goodness.
I had a red coat on. It wasn't bright orange like the hunters wear, but it was pretty bright. I mean, what deer wears a red jacket, right? Anyway, so yeah, it is really expensive. I know, you know, it's funny because the kids talk about the deer hunt when I was a kid, but it wasn't, I mean, yeah, they had a couple of tags and they generally speaking brought home some deer, a deer, some venison, but a lot of it was just going camping with dad, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the weekend or for the week or whatever. I think people still camp. I don't think camping numbers are down, are they?
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of people in my husband's family camp, but like my family growing up, we did not camp very often.
Not campers, huh?
No. Like there was one time I remember my parents said, go grab your 72-hour kit in the middle of the night, and they just took us and made us live on our 72-hour kit.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And then they determined that if there was another emergency like that, that they would leave me home because I complained too much.
I'm
more of a glamper.
Well, you're making me eat an MRE. Of course I'm going to complain, right?
No, I did not like it.
So my family, we used to camp a lot when we were newlyweds and until we had, well, we had three boys first, and we still camped quite a bit. And the very last time we camped, two things happened. First of all, our youngest boy fell in the fire.
Oh, no.
Not joking. He fell in the fire. So we were worried about the burns on his leg. We, you know, obviously we got him out of there as fast as we could or whatever. We were worried about the burns in his leg, on his leg. And we were going to jump on our van and head back to civilization. And we had a flat tire on the van.
Oh.
At the same time, we had a little baby who was in diapers. Now, a baby in diapers while you're camping, that's not good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
sounds like a bad time.
Yeah, and so that was actually literally the last time we went camping, you know, in a tent in the wilderness alone. And I mean, I've been a few times with my boys when they were scouts and stuff, but mm-hmm. that's different. Yeah, and that kind of is family. I was like, that's it. We're done. We'd rather get a hotel room. Glamping, yeah. As you say, right?
Yes, yeah. If I had a trailer, like, that I could pull behind or a pop-up, then I would probably consider it. But no, not my cup of tea, for sure.
All right, just to wrap up the whole, is hunting done in Utah? I don't think it's done in Utah, but now you have a lottery to get a tag. You can't just sign up and get a deer tag. You have to be selected to get a deer tag. Also, maybe the last factor of all is the hunting demographic. Did you know that 60% of all hunters are at least 45 years of age or older?
No.
So you're basically, your demographic, your hunters are dying off.
Yeah.
I mean, 45, they're not dying, but it's 45 or older. So a lot of them are in their 60s or 70s, and they're just not hunting as much anymore.
And then after you get your animal, like we were talking about before, then you have to process the animal, too. And I mean, I've had neighbors that would, like, hang up their deer in their garage and, like, let it bleed out, and it looked like there was somebody dead in their garage. Yeah. But, I mean, it's not easy or cheap to do that.
It is. It definitely is not. So, my conclusion is deer hunting dead in Utah? No, but I think it's much less of a thing than it used to be. I don't think you're going to see a Walmart or Costco or something covered in supplies for deer hunters like you have in the past. There's always stores like, you know, Sportsman's Warehouse mm-hmm. and stuff that will, you know, Cabela's, that will focus on hunters. But, yeah, I think it's, when you consider it went from not quite a majority to a major, major minority at 8%. Yeah, mm-hmm. that things have changed quite a bit.
But you also have to think about, I know you want to switch topics real quick, but you also have to think about people need to be able to take care of themselves. And that's something that you can provide for your family.
Yeah. Could you, if you had to, kill an animal and bring it home and clean it and then eat it? I know a lot of people have vegetable gardens and they will, you know, they'll grow vegetables and fruit. But could you, good point, Mello, could you shoot an animal, take it home, clean it, maybe clean it before you take it home, and let it bleed out or whatever, and then skin it? And I mean, I would not know how to do that, much less, you know, maybe have the stomach for it. I don't know if I do or not, but I wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah, I have a friend and she actually processes meat, and she is going to teach me how to kill a chicken and process it. And I'm going to. And we do have a call on line one. It's Dale, and he wants to talk about this too.
All right, Dale. Do you think hunting is going the way of the dodo bird in Utah?
I do, but let me tell you my experiences here. I grew up in the 50s and 60s. And I remember as I grew up in Salt Lake. I remember growing up when I turned 16, we would go hunting, and it was almost all, I mean, you'd get up in the morning and it was like an army moving out of Salt Lake. I mean, everybody was going hunting. You could go anywhere, and that's where I'm kind of headed to right now is after I got out of school, this is back in the 60s, or late 60s, I got a job, moved to California for a few years, several years actually. And when I don't ever remember not going hunting and growing up as a youth, so to speak. I mean, all my buddies and I, we were 16, we had cars, we would just head out where we wanted to go. We'd go up to Logan, Southern Utah, Eastern Utah, wherever, we would just go hunting. And a bunch of us would go together. It was good times together as friends. We never drank, so that we would just go have fun together.
Yeah.
And I get back from California, and all of a sudden I find out, hey, you have to have a permit to go. You have to draw or
a lottery,
a lottery type thing where you want to go. And I'm thinking, this is stupid. I mean, I still feel that way, you know.
Yeah.
So I think I've never gone hunting since then because of that. Because I'm not, I don't feel like I want to put in the draw and have to designate where I want to go and where's the best place to go and all of that. So I feel like that has a lot to do with it because people just don't want to sit and worry about a draw or where they want to go. They want to go where they want to go, not where the government tells them they have to go. No. So that's just my thoughts.
That's a good point. That's a good point. It's become a bit of a hassle, hasn't it?
It sure has. I'll tell you right now. You just, and not only that, you can't go with all your friends when you want to. You just, you know, they want to go where they want to go. And, I mean, we all went together and had great times together. So just I think that's one of the reasons. So,
thanks for the call, Dale. Appreciate it.
So the government regulations ruined all the fun.
Kind of. Well, I mean, if you add to it the fact that because, like Dale said, it was like an army of people headed up to the mountains, we farmed out a lot of the deer. We killed them all. Not all. We killed a lot of them. So you've got the situation now with the deer hunt where you have less deer, still a lot of hunters, and so then you have a lottery. And like Dale said, you kind of have to fill out when you're applying for the deer tag. There we go. That hey, this is where I'm going to hunt. I'm going to this specific spot. And if you don't go where you said, you could get in trouble.
Right, and what you're hunting with, right? Like either archery or muzzle or rifle or whatever you use.
So they made it a lot more work, I think. So, 9:25 now on KDXU. I think we have another caller. To do this, we also don't call yet, but we are going to give away some tickets to Sunday's Black Desert Championship. And Mello, do we have a caller then?
Yeah, Shelly is on line one.
Shelly, not my Shelly though.
No.
Okay.
Not your Shelly.
All right, Shelly, that's my wife's name, so I have to make sure that I'm not in trouble with my wife. But what's up, Shelly?
Pretty cool name, I guess.
It is a cool name.
So I really think, like, you now when you have to put in for the deer hunt, like, they give out so few tags.
Mm.
And so, like, you can put in for several years. My husband's put in for the elk hunt 27 years and has not got a tag.
Are you kidding?
And so he's got 27 points. He'll never get the tag.
Wow.
And every year you put in is $10 more. So he's already paid $270 and he's not going to get that elk tag, right?
That is crazy.
And it's the same thing with the deer hunt. For thousands of people put in for the deer hunt, $10 a piece, and they only give out a certain number of tags, and it's not a large number. And so not only do you have to choose your region that you want to go hunt in, but you have to get, like, your whole group that wants to go with you. Everybody has to put in for the same region, and not everybody's going to get a tag.
Yeah. I guess that's why they call it a lottery, because the odds aren't good that you get. 27 times in a row he's tried for the elk one and hasn't gotten it?
Yeah.
That is crazy. Holy cow. All right. Thanks for the call, Shelly. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Have a good day.
You too.
I thought the lottery was illegal in Utah.
Well, seriously, and when you think, I mean, if I were a conspiracy theorist, I would say, hey, the state of Utah's kind of taking all these people. They're throwing $10 every time they apply for anything. And if you apply for elk and deer, maybe the doe hunt, maybe the muzzle loader or the archery, you know, you're $50 in and you didn't get a tag in any of those. And the state of Utah's putting it in a pocket going, I didn't actually have any tags to give you.
They should have rolled over or something. That's not fair. 27 years in a row. That's just not right.
That is. Yeah, there ought to be. I mean, seriously, if you're going to wait that long and try that hard, it almost seems like there ought to be a in the Hall of Fame, they have the veterans group where they're separated from the others. And after you've waited so long, they kind of almost just kind of go, okay, yeah, you can go in. They should do that for somebody that's applied for a tag as many times as they've applied for a tag. It's just absolutely, I can't believe it. 27 times in a row. Is this Craig, by the way, on line one?
No, that's your caller.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll take a break. Celeste Malloy is going to join us on the air. Right now, you can call, though, for the Black Desert Championship tickets. We have, I have several to give away. I'm going to give away two pairs of tickets to the Black Desert Championship right now at 673-5890. We'll have one pair left to give away later in the program. So if you don't get it right now, you still got a shot later in the program. Again, call 673-5890. Callers 2 and 3 are going to be our winners. All right, cool. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy Griffin. Celeste Malloy, U.S. Congresswoman, is on the phone with me right now. Celeste, how are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning, Andy.
Thanks for coming on today. It's always good to talk to you. By the way, giving away PGA Black Desert PGA Championship tickets to Becky and Sherry won those two pair of tickets each. And we've got one more pair to give away here in about 10 or 15 minutes. So let's talk to Celeste Malloy first. Celeste, I mean, you're not here. You're busy and doing your thing. But having the PGA in St. George, that's pretty, well, in Ivins technically, pretty big deal for Utah, as we tend to, we just keep growing and getting bigger and more exciting stuff.
Yeah, I've been surprised how many people from other parts of the country have mentioned that to me. It's something that people follow, and they're excited to have it in Southern Utah.
Now, we were having a discussion moments ago about deer hunt and how back in the early 80s, it seemed like everyone went deer hunting. And now, only 7.9% of adults in Utah have a deer license. It's one of those things. Of course, a lot of people would hunt on public lands, but it's one of those things that has gone way, way down with growth. This has actually gone down instead of up. Are you surprised that there aren't that many hunters anymore? You're a hunter, right?
Yeah, but I don't go most years. I usually walk around with somebody else while they hunt, and I just like being out in the morning in the fall. But I am surprised it's that low. It seems like everybody I know in Utah does hunt. I just wonder if it's because people don't live in their small hometowns anymore. You know, everybody would go with their dad and their uncles and their grandpa, and it was a big family thing. And now people don't live close to their family like they used to in the 80s.
Yeah, and a lot of reasons. Obviously, it's expensive. Their lotteries are out, so you have to declare where you're going to go. And if you get lucky, you'll get a tag. And that has certainly, made people maybe not want to be into it as much either. But definitely part of the DNA of Utah is deer hunt.
Well, and I have friends who would tell you it's because the DNR doesn't manage them as well as they used to. Maybe there's just some perception that the hunting isn't as good as it used to be.
Could be for sure. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, so obviously we're getting close to the election coming up in just a few weeks. Yeah. And we don't know what's going to happen. We're hoping and praying that Donald Trump gets back in the White House. But what about the House of Representatives where you serve right now? What's the feeling? What are you hearing? What are you feeling about what's going to happen to the House in this upcoming election? Is it going to, are we going to get a Republican House even by a slight majority or what?
I think so. I think the optimism is growing amongst House members. Every pundit says this, so it's probably not news to any of your listeners. But the makeup of the House probably reflects how well Donald Trump does. So the math is in our favor in the Senate, but everyone in the House is up for election. So anything could happen there. And if Trump performs really well, then we'll have a bigger majority in the House. If he doesn't, then we may lose the House. But just in the last couple of days, I've seen some really encouraging Trump numbers that make me feel a lot better about the House. I saw numbers yesterday that showed him up by at least one point in all seven of the swing states. And I'm in Wisconsin right now. I'm here campaigning for one of my friends who's a target of the Democrats trying to flip the House. And he says they're seeing better numbers now than they were a month ago as well. So I think we've got this. I think Trump's going to win, and I think we're going to keep our majority in the House.
Man, I hope you're right. I know there's a lot, and I've said this before. I feel like real America, the America that I think still exists is moms and dads and families and you know, and the loud leftists, I mean, they're really loud, and it's hard to tune that out. But if you dig a little bit deeper and see that America still is mostly moms and dads and families and grandma and grandpa, and we can't afford to have, you know, have four more years of this, what we've been through the last three and a half, almost 4 years.
No, people want to have jobs. They want to know that their paycheck will, you know, get them through from month to month. And actually, they want more than that. They want their paycheck to make it so they live well enough that they can save for the future. And that isn't happening right now with the inflation. Groceries are expensive, and people are just not living as well as they did 5 years ago. And I think that's what people are going to be thinking about when they go vote.
Do you have an opinion, by the way, on the governor of Utah and what's happening there? I feel like he's going to win big, even though there has been a real movement of, for Phil Lyman supporters to write in his name, write in candidates almost and never, actually slim and none, the chances of winning as a write-in candidate. The Democrats very rarely win in Utah, so it seems like Governor Cox is going to win and be the governor for four more years. Is that how you see it, and do you have an opinion on this?
Yeah, I think he's going to win. He won in the primary, and I don't know why he would do worse in a general. I do worry that we have such a big division within the Republican Party over this. I wish we could accept outcomes and say, well, it was a hard-fought race, but now we're all back on the same team. That's how primaries are supposed to work, and I hope it starts working that way again soon.
I want to ask you, Celeste, so you are very candid. You, if someone asks you a question, you give your true and honest feeling about it. I love that. But have you been warned by some of the veteran politicians to, that, you know, hey, you got to kind of temper your speech. You can't say everything that you feel. Have you gotten that warning from some of the veterans?
I get warned about that all the time. and it's probably not smart in politics to actually say what you think. But I didn't get into this because I want to be in politics. I got into this because I want to solve problems in the second district. So I tell people what I think, and I try to be as honest as I can. And if that means someday I'm not in politics anymore, then so be it.
Yeah. Throw you out for being honest. Imagine that. A politician being honest. But it is refreshing, though, that you're really candid and really, really honest with us all. And, you know, I earlier in the show, I read a quote from Kamala Harris when they asked her a specific question, and she created this really flowery, I guess they're calling it word salad, and completely ignored the actual question. Just, you know, I think her goal was to confuse people.
She could teach a master class in how not to answer any questions when you're a politician. And I do think Americans are tired of that. I think everybody wants answers to questions. Anyone who's still willing to engage in politics is engaging because they want things to change. They want to understand what's happening. And so I think we owe it to Americans to be more honest and create more access so that they feel like we are accountable and responsible to them, not dodging them.
Yeah, yeah. I know you're not in the Senate, but have you heard any rumblings on how the Senate races are going this election? Is it kind of the same thing, how Donald Trump does? That's how the Senate's going to do as well, or not?
No, there are more Democrat seats up right now than Republican seats in the Senate, because only a third of them are up for re-election right now. Mm-hmm. And everybody I've talked to who knows anything about elections thinks we've got a really good chance of taking the Senate back, just because of the math of which seats are up for re-election. With the narrow majority we have, or the narrow minority we have in the Senate, we'd only have to take two of those seats, and most people think we will.
Well, that would be great.
And so I don't think that one's as dependent on how well Trump does. The House definitely is. There aren't that many people left who vote for one party at the top of the ticket and a different party on other federal races. So if people are supporting Trump, they're going to support the Republican House member. If they're not supporting Trump, they're probably going to vote for the Democrat.
I got a note from Bella, who is your public relations. I don't know what's her position. Does she have an official title?
Communications director.
Communications director. That's the word I was looking for. Anyway, Bella said you wouldn't mind talking about the Chevron deference. And I'm like, okay, I'm not sure what she means by that. So maybe you can explain that.
Yeah, that's what I talk about every time I'm on your show.
Okay.
So the Chevron case was the one that said that courts would defer to agencies when they're interpreting rules as long as Congress wasn't clear. And they overturned that case this summer. And what that means is we're in a very different regulatory environment than we've been since 1984 when Chevron was decided. And that means Congress has a bigger role to play in battling back government overreach. So I talk about government overreach all the time. We've got agencies that are writing, interpreting, and enforcing their own rules, and that's just not the way it was supposed to work. And we have the best opportunity right now that we've had in a generation to address that. And so it's an example of things just lining up timing-wise. It's the thing that I care the most about and talk the most about, and it just so happens that the court overturned that case right when I got here to be part of the solution. So I'm excited that we are facing a future where families in Utah don't have as much government interference in their day-to-day life. For example, everybody cares a lot right now about Title IX and what universities and schools are going to do regarding women's sports. Well, in a post-Chevron world, I think the Department of Education has a lot less influence on what universities are going to do. These things should be decided at the local level, not at the national level, and we're moving in that direction. So as contentious as politics are right now, as much as everything feels like it's in upheaval and in flux, I actually think we're moving toward smaller, more accountable government and greater individual freedom, which is where we all want to be. So don't lose hope. Go vote in November, but stay engaged, stay involved. I think we're going in the right direction, as bad as it seems right now.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned it. I was just thinking about how President Trump has said, perhaps, former President Trump has said, perhaps if he gets elected, that Elon Musk would be in charge of making federal government more efficient, maybe cutting back on some of those areas. Do you see that happening? Have you seen bloat in the federal government that we got to do something?
Yes.
Yeah.
The federal government is mostly bloat. Mm. And this is what I talk about all the time. Every agency was created to do something. But they grow over time. They grow their own missions. They reach into things that they don't have any business being involved in. They always want a bigger budget. They always want to take on more responsibility. It's just the nature of bureaucracy. And we've had too high of a tolerance for bureaucracy for 4 years now. And so we have an opportunity here that the court just cleared a lane for Congress and the courts, especially I think state attorneys general are going to have a big role to play over the next few years in challenging these rules and battling them back. And when they do, you know, Congress is going to have to codify this, and states are going to have to step up and do some of the work. But it's going to be a good result for Americans. If you don't like a rule that comes out of the state of Utah, you can go to Capitol Hill and talk to your state representatives, talk to the head of a state agency, and have a conversation, present your case, probably even persuade them. That is really hard to do if you have to go to Washington, D.C. and talk to the head of the Department of Education. They're not going to take the meeting, and they're not going to care what you say anyway.
Yeah.
And they're not accountable to you in any way. You don't have any way of getting to a political appointee in Washington, D.C., but that's not true at the state level.
Yeah, good point. And oft times, and Zach Renstrom always talks about this, sometimes something will get sent to this whatever federal agency is supposed to go to, and it'll sit on somebody's desk, maybe interminably, and never, ever get off there, even make a few phone calls and stuff. All right, I'm going to ask you, I asked Mike Lee this last week. I'm going to ask you the same question. We only have a couple of minutes in this segment. Number one, if Kamala Harris wins, what will America look like in a year? And I'll let you have the good answer will be what if Donald Trump wins in a year, too. So we'll do the bad one first, though.
I'm afraid in a year if Kamala Harris wins, we still have way too much federal government and we have too much chaos because the government isn't running the way it's supposed to. If Donald Trump wins, we already know what that looks like. Look back 4 years, that's what it looks like. We'll have a better economy. Our paychecks will be going farther and we'll have a government that's responding to our state and local elected officials, and that's the America I want to live in.
Sounds good to me. Celeste Molloy, U.S. Congresswoman. Celeste, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us on this Friday morning.
You're welcome.
Get some good cheese out there in Wisconsin while you're there, right?
I already have.
All right.
The leaves are beautiful. Everyone should come to Wisconsin and visit and convince them to vote like Republicans.
Sounds good. Thank you, Celeste. We'll see you later. Right now, I have two more tickets. Now, I did want to thank Adam Snow and the county commissioners for helping us get these tickets available to give away for you. We have, Mello, two more tickets to give away for Black Desert PGA Golf. This is for Sunday. This is Championship Sunday. So not today, not tomorrow, but Sunday's PGA Tour Championship. We have one pair of tickets left if you want them. Give me a call at 673-5890. Mello, do they need to know anything before they call?
Nope, I just need their email.
Yeah, be prepared to give us your email address because they are e-tickets. They will be emailed to you. And so we definitely have got to have your email address. What caller number do you want to take?
Let's do caller number one today.
All right. For whoever was fastest gets the tickets. All right, though, we'll take a break. 647 on KDXU. I do want to spend just a second talking about Heartlight Funeral Services. If you've been to Heartlight's website, it's pretty cool. HeartlightFS.com is their website. Now, Heartlight Funeral Services has a different take on end-of-life procedures for you or for your loved one. Instead of depressing sadness, dark panel, dark room, chapels, they don't have a chapel. They figure, you know what, most people in Utah are using the chapel in their church anyway for a funeral service if that's what they want to do. They have this bright, white, beautiful funeral service storefront in off Buena Vista, 504 West Buena Vista Boulevard. And they have big screen TVs. They have recliners. They have a 23-foot white wall where they can play a tribute to your loved one that has passed away on this big, giant screen. It is refreshing. Like I said, we've always treated funerals and death the same way for generations and generations. Well, Heartlight Funeral Services has a different take. They do things like, man, they had one guy, he wanted a 21-gun salute when he died. So they took his ashes after he was cremated and put some of them in shotgun shells, and each family member got to go and shoot the shotgun shell with his ashes in it. And that was part of the tribute. Like I said, it's just a different take on end-of-life celebration and services. It's Heartlight Funeral Services. Their website is heartlightfs.com. Heartlight Funeral Services is... Let's try that. There we go. Heartlight Funeral Services is AG approved.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Winners, you want winners? We got winners all over the place. Mello. All right, let's go over our winners now. We ended up giving away five pairs of tickets to Sunday's PGA Golf event. Becky and Sherry Rem, R-E-M, Rochelle, that's with an O, Rochelle, mm-hmm. Rochelle, and Jeff are our five winners. So thanks to all of them for listening, and thanks to all of them for wanting to be a part of things. And, you know, there are people in this town who think that having the PGA here is a bad thing. There are people in this town who think it's a wonderful thing. And it's kind of weird because I'm like, how am I supposed to feel about this? It creates more traffic, but it's kind of a big deal. I remember somebody from Black Desert came on, and this was 6 months ago or something, said, this will be the biggest sporting event in Utah since the Olympics or the NBA Finals. This is because PGA is the best of the best. So, I don't know. How do you feel about it? You live in Santa Clara, so you're a lot closer.
I know, but everywhere I go takes a lot longer. So that's not fun.
Traffic's kind of tough, huh?
Yeah, and then also over by the Harmons, like there's a lot of traffic going up that road by Harmons and Highway 91. Trying to get out onto Highway 91 is kind of cramped a little bit. But I'm happy to have those sporting events here, and the PGA is a great opportunity for our community to grow and to show other people how beautiful it is here.
A couple of other things I wanted to do. Dave, our boss, just handed me a thing. That's I guess we're having a Town Square Media Customer Appreciation Day sale. That is next Wednesday. So it's coming up in 5 days from right now. See how radio and digital can boost your business with our customer appreciation sale. Up to 50% off regular advertising rates. Act fast. Our customer appreciation sale is Wednesday only. So one day, big sale. By the way, they will be having a luncheon here. It kind of an open house luncheon. So you can come, Mello, you can come mm-hmm. too. Come over here and have some, I think be catered. So have some sandwiches or meatballs or whatever it is they end up with. And the folks can come in and get a half price discount on advertising.
Nice. Very cool. Great deal.
That's next Wednesday. We're down to just a few minutes left. Let's make sure we have time for Richard. Richard is on line three. Richard, what's going on, man?
Good show today, guys.
Thank you, Richard. Good to talk to you, man.
Talked about a subject near and dear to my heart, the old deer hunt.
Yeah.
Not so dear like it used to be. But the reason why you don't hear about it is the tree huggers mostly, but on the hunt, you know, we've had a couple of bad winters up north, so they really got socked, so they've cut back their numbers. There's a little over 70,000 permits let go, and I'm assuming that's archery, rifle, muzzleloader, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
In the good old days, I've been hunting for 50 years. You know, it was over the counter. You could shoot anything that moved out there. A lot of it was an orange, and a few them guys got shot.
Yeah.
That was the days when we just used red shirts, so it was Dayton clear back there.
Yeah, but anyway, the red didn't work for me, by the way. I almost got shot. But, yeah, go ahead.
Well, you're sticking your head up too high or something. But anyway, yeah. And then they busted the hunt down to different areas. So, and southern Utah happens to be a little better, so they released more ticket tags down here. And we got two hunts. The early hunt started on the 9th and ends on the Sunday, and then the later hunt starts on the following weekend. But who wants to go hunting when it's 95 degrees?
That's a good point.
I was out the other morning.
Well, yeah, okay.
Saw a couple bucks and decide, I don't want to do this. It would have been a hell of a drag, and I just had a new knee put on this spring, so I didn't feel like working too hard. But so they passed up so they get bigger for the next guy. But it just isn't like you said, the deer camps anymore. That used to be a family get-together outing, you know, and then it's so hard to everybody get a tag. So one or two people have a tag now, and then everybody else is just sitting around chewing the fat, I guess, which is fun for camping. But,
yeah,
they've messed it up, but they say it's all in management. But my feeling is they manage the deer kind of like they manage our forest. Let them burn.
Yeah. Not so good. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Richard.
Hey, thanks, man.
Thanks for calling, Richard. Yeah, we're down to the final 2 minutes on the program. Did want to read a text from Jan. Her first text was, a couple generations of youth growing up on screens will cut down the deer hunt quite a bit. Yeah.
That's true.
And she also said, let's see, I like the other answers, regulation complications, such as applying for tags, lottery, choosing location, the expense, families not living close to relatives, and younger generations not outdoor oriented.
That's true. That's a very good point.
Yeah. So, okay. Mello, any plans for the weekend, by the way, as we wrap up the show today?
I'm going to be at the Cedar City tailgate party for SUU.
Nice, SUU tailgate party, right?
So, and I'll be giving away some stuff
giving
there.
Giving stuff away?
Yeah,
nice.
Giving stuff away from 12 to 2, you know, right before the game.
It's not a real tailgate unless somebody's barbecuing some bratwurst.
I wonder, I could bring my little barbecue. Would that be allowed?
Do it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
You can't take it in the stadium, but out in the parking lot, you can, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I've never been to a tailgate, so I'm kind of excited.
It's a lot of fun. No, they don't tailgate here like they do back east or in the southeast, but still, you got to have a real tailgate, and with a real tailgate, you got to have some brats on the barbie and maybe some ribs or something like that. So yeah, that'll be fun.
I'll bring my husband and make him do it.
Yeah. I know he's going to be busy Sunday.
Yeah.
So, but, again, I want to thank everybody for listening. Celeste Malloy for coming on the program today. And as always, Mello, I appreciate you and what you add to the program.
Well, thanks for having me. It's
always
been fun.
A lot of fun. That'll wrap things up from here. On Monday, we have a lady on. It's an interesting. So I talked with Don Willie. Remember him? He used to be the Chamber of Commerce president here. He has set up an interview with me, the lady with international ties. Well, it's complicated, but we'll have her name is Felicia. She'll be on the show on Monday, and there's so much more going on next week. We'll hear from Dave Romer and Chamber of Commerce, and it's all coming up on the Andy Griffin Show. Thanks for listening.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.